second. I'd like to thank David for granting extra minutes. I'd like to thank the organizers for the invitation to open this conference on a favorite subject, black hole information. The information problem, what has been called a paradox, can be summarized in a few lines. Basically, information that you throw into a black hole can't get out by locality, can't be destroyed because that would violate quantum mechanics and also lead to massive energy non-conservation, and can't be left behind in a remnant because that would result in catastrophic instabilities. There are two possibilities here. One is that somehow we have made a stupid mistake. However, we've been studying and refining our approaches to this problem over more than 30 years, and it seems increasingly clear that that is not the case. And in fact, that the second possibility is the case, that this is an indication of some new physics that we need to understand. So it seems to me that we should regard this as a fundamental conflict between some very basic principles of physics, indicated here, locality, Lorentz invariance, extended to local Lorentz invariance, and quantum mechanics. And these, of course, are the cornerstones of local quantum field theory, which is a remarkable edifice, seemingly describes all known physics, but seems to be an impossible object in the gravitational context. Two quick comments, which we'll come back to. Quantum mechanics and Lorentz invariance seem hard to modify, respecting consistency and observation, but locality seems like a softer property in quantum gravity. Another comment, it doesn't seem to be a problem of the singularities or necessarily of renormalizability, but the problem is more of a long distance issue. In fact, first of all, we need some new ideas, and if we search for a historical analog, one that I think is a useful guide is the classical instability crisis, which we encountered in atomic physics. So there, we discovered, of course, that physics failed manifestly at the charge center as the electron spirals in, a true breakdown. But in the end, quantum mechanics became relevant long before that, and the classical picture just isn't pertinent at such short distances. And in order to understand what was happening, of course, we needed to invent some new physics, the uncertainty principle, wave mechanics, the whole story of quantum mechanics. A possible parallel is that we should be thinking about quantum gravity and black holes in the same way. Namely, there are short distance issues, singularities, breakdown of local quantum field theory. But it appears that quantum gravity needs to be relevant all the way out to, in some sense, the horizon scale for a black hole. We see some indications of a breakdown of local quantum field theory on such scales. The big question is, what is the final story? Some new physics is certainly needed, and that's what we're here to try to address, is what that new physics is. So from this viewpoint, think of the information problem as a guide to understanding the new principles and mechanisms in operation, much as the stability problem of the atom guided the formulation of quantum mechanics. What other guides do we have? Well, here's a quick list. Some of these have been covered in the conference, in the workshop, or will be covered in the conference. There's the approach of studying possible microstates, the relationship with problems in cosmology, where we have some tests. Other things that have been discussed a little less, the problem of formulating locality and local observables in quantum gravity. Here's at least one reference to that subject. The study of the gravitational S matrix, here's one entree to that. Also, perhaps these miraculous properties of supergravity theories, amplitude magic, which has been more the subject of previous workshops. So those are some of the things I don't plan to touch on really here. I will, however, talk about briefly ADS-CFT, the problem of correspondence, and quantum information transfer from black holes. First, ADS-CFT, and more detail on the comments I'll make are in this reference. Many regard this as a resolution to our problems. But we should ask the question, can we recover from ADS-CFT, from the boundary theory, a sufficiently fine-grained bulk description, specifically of evolution of a small black hole and, say, of observers falling into it? Can we give a consistent story and an explicit story in terms of the boundary theory? What we appear to need is a map between the bulk and boundary Hilbert spaces at the fully interacting level. And that map, of course, needs to be one-to-one and unitary if we're going to capture the full physics in the boundary theory. Of course, the boundary evolution is unitary. And so if we have such a map, that gives us a way of describing the bulk evolution by basically pulling it back, the boundary evolution back to the bulk. But we really need to understand the details of this map relating the two Hilbert spaces. There are various approaches to that. The question of formulating local bulk observables has been discussed at the workshop. In general, that's a challenge in quantum gravity. And we might try to make contact, say, between some of these proposals and this general relational approach that seems to be a valid approach in quantum gravity, which again is, for example, outlined in this reference. And actually, that has been a successful approach, I should emphasize. That's what we do in describing some features of inflation. So there's an unclear final outcome on the local bulk observable side, at least it seems to me. There's another approach, which is formulating the, or extracting the S matrix in the flat space limit. The problem here is to construct scattering states from boundary data and extract the full fine-grained S matrix then in terms of those scattering states. There hasn't been much discussion of that at the workshop, and there are some significant challenges. I'll only say that and then refer you both to this work with Mike Gary, who's here somewhere, and also to the reference I gave previously. So because of these difficulties, I want to think about the problem more generally, and here are some more general approaches. I'll only focus, as I said, on the first two and leave the S matrix for another talk. So first, the question of correspondence, which is a very important concept in physics, basically when a theory breaks down and how it matches on to a more complete theory. So our existing theory that we presently use to describe physics is local quantum field theory, say in a semi-classical gravitational background, and there are various proposals for where that fails. When we reach Planckian curvatures, there are proposals involving modifications to the uncertainty principle, say involving string effects or other effects. There are proposals involving modified dispersion relations, and there are the so-called holographic bounds. But let's think about this a bit further. So for example, in local quantum field theory, what are the basic configurations? Well, they're basically states of particles. Let's think about two particles in minimum uncertainty wave packets. And so they have a definite position and momentum in this particular case. When, or approximately definite position and momentum, when does this description fail? And it's pretty clear that this description in terms of quantum field theory states fails, and in fact receives strong gravitational corrections when, say, the separation between the two particles is small as compared to the appropriate power of their center of mass energy. So this and multiparticle generalizations, are called locality bounds, And they're sort of an analog of the Heisenberg microscope discussion in the story of quantum mechanics. Another way of thinking about this is to time reverse the picture where you're forming a black hole, and you learn that certain states that apparently look like they would make sense in local quantum field theory could only come from a white hole geometry. So pretty clearly, you need the full quantum gravity story to describe them. So we'd like to have some more guides to this regime. One guide I'm going to assume is a very basic property of the physics is quantum mechanics. I'm going to take that seriously. And also, one more assumption I'm going to make is that we can describe physics in terms of interacting quantum subsystems of a bigger system. So for example, when we think about a quantum black hole, it can interact with its environment. We describe the combined system in terms of a states in a tensor product space, and we have information exchange between the factors. And ultimately, the whole evolution is described in a unitary fashion. So one way to think about this kind of description is as an effective quantum theory. We're just parameterizing quantum mechanics, but it has the potential really to be more. Recall that if you take this approach thinking about physics, where you start with quantum mechanics and you add the condition of locality and also demand Poincaré invariance, you essentially reinvent the basic framework of quantum field theory. So this kind of approach of sort of parameterizing your ignorance but then adding general principles can be extremely powerful. Another guide towards this set of problems is to ask how we can be as close as possible to the local quantum field theory description in the spirit of correspondence. Now, local quantum field theory, of course, gives an incomplete model of these quantum subsystems. But let's quickly review what local quantum field theory says. So here's the basic picture of a black hole and Hawking particles and partner excitations being created in that background. In order to describe this in terms of states, it's useful to introduce a slicing. Let's use one that stays away from the singularity, a so-called nice slicing. And in fact, the nice slices sharpen the tension between unitarity and local quantum field theory. So we'll look at states on those slices, and with a little bit of effort, we can figure out the structure of those states. The so-called Hawking state involves, again, these paired excitations, which are created by basically creation operators inside and outside the black hole. And here, these have indices on them that label both the asymptotic frequency of the excitation and the position along the slice. So that's what, to many, is a familiar description of the state. Now, there's a little problem with this particular expression. Let's think about a given time slice. If we take n goes to infinity, that corresponds to going into the horizon, shorter and shorter wavelength excitations. So let's regularize by only thinking about excitations longer than a given proper wavelength. And then, of course, the shorter wavelength modes are essentially in what looks like, say, to an infalling observer, the vacuum state. So we'll write down a regulated version of this expression, taking into account that kind of cutoff, where we separate off, again, the short wavelength modes, and they are in what looks like vacuum to infalling observers, and then we have these paired excitations inside and outside the black hole. And once we've done this, we've exhibited the Hawking state as a state living in a tensor product space as described. One quick comment, this overall vacuum state we can think of as going either way with the black hole, or from the information theoretic viewpoint, often one just tensors in trivial one-dimensional subspaces, so one can think of it as being ancillary. And also, let me remind you, here we're describing finite dimensional Hilbert spaces if we're only describing evolution up to a finite time. So this is a basic picture of the state. Again, I assume this is familiar to many. How does it evolve? Well, in the two-dimensional examples, which are quite explicit, actually the evolution is trivial, but in general, we can describe the evolution in terms of the unitary operator that comes from local quantum field theory and say include infalling matter and so on. One other piece of this, however, is how to deal with this cutoff. The modes stretch out of short distance out to longer distances, so we need to shift the cutoff if we want to keep the cutoff corresponding to a fixed proper wavelength. And so that means that the dimensions of the tensor factors change as you evolve. And a very simple way of describing what's going on, sort of a cartoon of this whole process, can be written down by thinking about these so-called qubit models. And I know, Samir also has looked at these. So a very simple toy example of this basic process is that you start with the vacuum at a given time, and that evolves to the vacuum at a later time. And then plus you create these correlated pairs, either, zero particles inside and outside, one, and so on. Let's just truncate to zero or one. And here we'll also ignore the thermal factors, which are of order one for modes of the proper, of the appropriate energy. Okay, so that's a basic picture of evolution. And as we know, this leads to non-unitarity. The reason is that if we look at the external state described by this density matrix, where we trace out the inside degrees of freedom, that external state has an entropy, a von Neumann entropy, which grows with time, and it grows up to a value of order of the Bekenstein-Hawking entropy. So that represents the missing information that would be either destroyed or left behind in a remnant. Again, those are both problematical. And so in fact, what we would like is to understand how instead the evolution of the entropy is such that it goes back down to zero, starting around a time scale of order the half-life of the black hole, as originally argued by Page. Now, there are arguments for why the nice slice description, the local quantum field theory description, fails on these timescales. Basically, there are problems making this description gauge invariant, and also problems with a perturbative quantization on the nice slices. But while that may resolve the basic paradox, the logical paradox, it doesn't answer the question, how do we describe correct evolution such that the information comes out of the black hole? So let's think about this again in terms of quantum subsystems. And just a quick note, if ADS-CFT does give us the complete story, it seems that it could well work this way, that we need to isolate the quantum subsystems corresponding to, say, small black holes in the bulk and so on. One other refinement I would like to include here, though, is to think about a further subdivision where we have states that are far from the black hole, a black hole atmosphere, and then states of the black hole. And the reason for that should become clear. First of all, states very far from the black hole, we expect to be evolving essentially through the usual kind of local quantum field theory evolution, if we're talking about low energy particles. No big modifications there. How states near to the black hole, we also expect to be largely described in local quantum field theory terms, say photons streaming out of a gravitational potential, picturesquely. But the Hilbert space of the black hole itself, we expect to be largely modified as compared to the local quantum field theory description, which I've outlined. One comment, again, we expect both of these to be finite dimensional spaces, and in fact, one guess for the dimension of the black hole Hilbert space is that it's given by the Bekenstein-Hawking entropy. So next, let's talk about evolution. So we expect states, at least putting in a very coarse notion of locality, states in the black hole atmosphere get transferred to states far away from the black hole, say all the way out at Alpha Centauri, by evolution that is essentially that of local quantum field theory. On the other hand, the coupled evolution of the black hole atmosphere and the black hole states cannot be that of local quantum field theory because that doesn't produce the correct unitary story. So that's a first look at how we might describe things in terms of quantum subsystems. There are various other constraints we might want to require of the evolution. So again, the entropy goes to zero. We might expect that we should have a description that's innocuous for infalling observers. We have something that behaves perhaps like Hawking's story at the coarse grain level and so on. And of course, this should all be part of a complete consistent story. These combined constraints are non-trivial. In fact, it's not clear they can be satisfied at all. So it's worth exploring whether they can be satisfied. Taking as a basic guideline that we should try to be as conservative as possible. So what are modifications of the local quantum field theory story that are, in some sense, conservative? So again, here's the basic picture of local quantum field theory. Let's look at this question of modifications of it, but first look at modifications that are, in a sense, not most conservative. So here's an example of such a modification in these qubit models. We have a bit that falls into the black hole, so it becomes part of the black hole state. And then let's imagine that there's an action of a unitary operator, or say a random unitary that scrambles that bit with all the other degrees of freedom on a timescale of order, say, r or r log r. And then after that, in the new basis, we have transfer of a bit out of the black hole. So I'm separating scrambling and transfer. So this is a toy model which can be generalized to more to finite dimensional models, but indicates a basic picture. And this is not most conservative in the following sense. First of all, it's a very big departure from the local quantum field theory nice slice evolution that I've discussed. And this is also, well, at least a story is told along with this, the story of complementarity. But more sharply, Hayden and Preskill showed that after sufficient evolution of this kind, a black hole will behave as an information mirror. Information just bounces off of the black hole, basically, or reflects very rapidly. So one classification, in fact, of the different kinds of evolution is in terms of these scrambling, these timescales, scrambling and transfer. And the basic proposal of Susskind and others is that both of those are timescales of order r log r, very short timescales. Page simply essentially argued that the transfer has to be on a timescale short or less than of order, the much longer r times s. And then you can also compare the local quantum field theory predictions. Of course, the nice slice story is that the information never scrambles and never transfers. And in the case of slices, of course, that go into the singularity, still the information never transfers, although it may scramble once these slices do reach the singularity. So there's a lot of room between, well, what local quantum field theory tells you, what we need for unitarity, and these, in some ways, rather extreme proposals. Another proposal that seems like a big departure from local quantum field theory is the old proposal of massive remnants and the new realization, it seems, of fuzzballs, namely that a black hole blows up into some information-rich object outside the would-be horizon. And here you have, well, a lot of information stored here, a strongly varying microstructure containing that information. And so you might expect, well, actually it's clear you have big modifications to the black hole Hilbert space, but you might also expect that if you fell into that, you would have a serious impact, like falling into something like a neutron star. At least it's a problem to try to explain why that doesn't happen. So is evolution required to be such a large departure from local quantum field theory? And let's explore, starting with these qubit models, some possible evolution laws that are, in a sense, in comparison, more conservative. So here's one possibility. Here we have, say, the states of the inside of the black hole, the nice slice states. Let's isolate the leftmost qubits, again, giving a toy model, and consider unitary evolution where the information from those imprint on the paired excitations that usually comprise the Hawking radiation. We could also have, of course, unitary evolution of particles away from the black hole and unitary evolution of the inside degrees of freedom. And so this is a toy model. It might be, say, very local quantum field theory-like for inside evolution. And again, can be generalized to multi-mode situations. This model is really very Hawking-like. We're not modifying the Hawking evolution. Well, we're sort of doing it in a minimal way. The information is being imprinted in typically, well, in the typical Hawking modes, and in fact, the net flux in these toy models of this particular kind is the same as that of the, that is calculated in the toy Hawking state. So that's one kind of model. Let me give you another. Here we have the qubits inside the black hole, or more generally, the information imprint in modes that are not typically occupied in the Hawking radiation. And in addition, you have the Hawking particles produced. Again, you can have unitaries acting on the separate subsystems as well. And again, these can be generalized to more realistic multi-mode situations. This is a more generic kind of evolution, but it's one that leads also to extra energy flux. And just a quick comment on that, that potentially, if you're not careful, can get you back into the original problems of information loss or remnants. So clearly, these illustrate basic features, and further complexity is possible. And of course, one can apply further of these constraints that I briefly outlined. Let's be clear, this evolution is non-local with respect to the semi-classical geometry. So let's discuss that, and also this question of what infalling observers see, how painful they feel the horizon to be. So here's a picture. We should think of this as, at this point, a cartoon. So you have an infalling, say, bit of information. We have in mind that the inside, the would-be singularity is really a regular place where a lot of information is stored. And ultimately, it has to transfer out. Let's suppose it transfers into modes when they are very short wavelength. In that case, an infalling observer would see those excitations as hard particles. They would have a painful collision, and in fact, enough of these would destroy the horizon. But on the other hand, if information transfers to the modes when they're at longer wavelengths, say a thousandth of the radius of the black hole, then an infalling observer merely sees one extra quantum of energy of order 1 over the radius of the black hole per light crossing time of the black hole, which is a very innocuous modification of the state. We wouldn't feel a single photon per light crossing time of this room with the wavelength of this room passing through. We'd have to work very hard to observe that. So again, the idea here is that the geometry is not strictly the correct picture of the physics, and space-time is an approximation, but this is trying to represent it in those terms. I also want to mention this is not necessarily acausal, although it is non-local, because the black hole chooses a frame. A couple of other comments. This constraint that the horizon be pain-free restricts you to a relatively small dimension of excitations where you imprint the information. And also, there is a notion of a sort of complementarity that needs to apply. Namely, if we have some information transfer out that at some point was dropped into the black hole, well, by the no cloning principle, by the time it does transfer out, it has to be, in a sense, erased from the internal state. But that could take place on very long timescales, as long as this sort of characteristic page time. And that might be associated with this story that the nice slice description is not good at these very long times. So we can explore other restrictions on this story from both physical considerations and also basic considerations of quantum information theory. For example, let me give you a quick illustration of the latter. Let's try to describe what kinds of information transfer we can have. And there's actually a simplest kind of information transfer that already has been used, that's what we call subspace transfer. If you have a Hilbert space which has two tensor factors, you can unitarily simply exchange the tensor factor, or one of the tensor factors, you can move it over to another subspace. So without much imagination, you call this subspace transfer. And that's modulo unitaries that can act either before or after the transfer on the individual subsystems. And this can actually be mathematically characterized as saturating a certain subadditivity condition. Let me contrast this kind of minimal or most efficient information transfer with another kind, and this is the simplest example of that. Suppose there's a bit inside the black hole, or maybe it's the live or dead state of a cat. And you can have evolution that, in effect, imprints some of the information on the outside state, so you could read off whether the cat is alive or dead, but this doesn't transfer all of the quantum information. So the example I gave that was very Hawking-like was minimal, and the other example with the extra flux was not. And again, you can investigate these various other descriptions of the basic features of the information transfer. There are possible reasons to expect that we're something near minimal, both that we're looking for what is in some ways a weak modification of the local quantum field theory story, and also if we're looking for something that, well, if you expect it to be thermodynamic, and finally this constraint that the atmosphere Hilbert space serves as a bottleneck, it has a small dimension, it can also push you in that direction. So let me just close with some thoughts about putting all of this in a broader context. So a first suggestion is that quantum states, which should be clear from this, quantum states are more basic than space-time. So how do we think about this? Well, first of all, there's the question of locality or localization. And we've seen something like localization in this kind of tensor factor structure. In fact, in local quantum field theory, part of the statement of locality is that local operators create independent tensor factors if they correspond to different regions. But this is a sort of coarser-grained version of that story. And you might try to assemble Hilbert spaces and tensor factors to build up a quantum analog of a manifold, say where you have common factors of overlapping tensor factors and so on. Here we encounter some common ideas with algebraic quantum field theory. And also, Banks has proposed some similar proposals, although there are important differences. Notably, his story is supposed to be holographic, and and there are various other differences. Now, on such a structure, we then would like to describe unitary evolution, and you would like that to be, of course, in some sense, approximately local and approximately local quantum field theory in appropriate circumstances. So the name of the game is trying to understand how to describe such a thing in the context of this kind of quantum analog of a manifold. Another important question is how symmetries come into the game, and of course, symmetries are implemented by action of unitary operators, and you can think about global symmetries which act on the entire Hilbert space or local versions as well. So the basic idea is that we might describe the basic framework for a unitary theory of quantum gravity in terms of these Hilbert space networks. And I'll just leave you with the conclusions, and I'll stop there. Thank you.
So if you have a question, wait for the mic to arrive to see your question.
So I was wondering, in the context of ADS-CFT, if you had a collapsing matter shell that formed a black hole. So there we have at least some picture of what the full Hilbert space is, but something that's confused me is whether there's some subset of those gauge theory degrees of freedom that you could associate with your black hole Hilbert space. Have you thought about what that might be in this case?
Well, here, again, well, it's a challenging problem, and I've thought about simpler things. Mm-hmm. You know, how to describe, say, colliding particles, never mind the actual black hole states. And there you do encounter the subtleties of understanding properly this map in the full interacting theory between the boundary states and the bulk states. Mm-hmm. And that's been a real challenge. So we've been able to see some basic correspondences at a very coarse grain level between properties of bulk and boundary, but really resolving things at the fine grain level seems to be difficult still.
Mm-hmm. So Steve, you mentioned that in order to make life as innocuous as possible for the infalling observer, you want the information transfer to happen on sort of scales R, and I just wanted to check on you whether you currently think that that's really sufficient, and if so, to solve the problem, and if so, what happens if you try to extract energy from deeper down, closer to the black hole horizon?
Well, so the basic constraint is, or the most basic constraint is the curve back down, the curve of the entropy, and that's of order 1 bit per light crossing time after the half-life of the black hole. And so we're able to describe that in terms of these simple models. Now, I know you've been thinking about the problem of sort of modifying the black hole atmosphere, say by dropping a wire into or a conductor into it, or arranging other kinds of experiments that sort of mine degrees of freedom. And in that context, well, you are modifying the modes near the black hole. And the argument that you're making is that you can get faster energy transfer, and it may well be that you probably do need faster information transfer then. And so, well, it's a good question how we would describe that. But again, when you're modifying those modes or the local atmosphere, you might also modify the modes to which the information transfer is taking place.
Do you expect the same kind of modification of dynamics would happen near a de Sitter horizon? And how about a Rindler horizon? And if not, why not?
So since we're talking about how to formulate quantum gravity, then I certainly would expect a related story in the de Sitter context. And it's a very interesting question, what are the differences and what features are the same in that case? And so that's worth thinking about. Well, there are definitely similar considerations. In the Rindler context, however, there is one big difference, and that is, one way to think about Rindler spaces is the mass goes to infinity limit of the black hole. And in that limit, then, the information transfer can become arbitrarily slow. The basic features, the modifications can become arbitrarily small. So that's a place where you might not expect, or you might be expecting to go to a limit where this kind of story is not important. But again, there are various interesting aspects of de Sitter, but probably not so good to discuss here.
Follow?
So in these toy models that you were talking about, if I understand it correctly, it seems like there will be people who see quantum cloning. Is that right?
No, there's no cloning. No.
So how does that work if you have nice slices and you have people outside who can get the information and?
So again, that comes back to. I said it went by probably quickly, but there's got to be something like a weak notion of complementarity, namely, if you're describing the internal state of the black hole, by the time a given bit comes out, it's got to be erased let's phrase it this way. If a bit comes in and then later comes out through information transfer, then it can't have a clone copy inside. So there's got to be something like an erasure of, at least from the perspective of the nice slice argument. This is much weaker than the usual story that's told of complementarity, where something like this happens at the horizon. What's that? Let's go back even further to, if I can get there fast enough. Okay, here you see it. So you have the information 00011011. That information is transferred to the paired states near the horizon and is no longer there in the inside state. The A hat, again, this went by fast, so I'm glad you're asking me to clarify. The A hat are the other qubits that are not transferring yet. So another way of representing it is you could say that 00 inside goes to 00, 01 inside goes to 00, 10. In other words, the bits literally are erased. But the usual quantum information theoretic way of doing things is just to drop such trivial one-dimensional subspaces.
In some models, if you change modify the asymptotic boundary condition, it's possible to make the lifetime of the black hole longer. Is there some kind of bound, say if you make the black hole lifetime long enough, it can evade the standard information paradox?
What do you have in mind specifically?
The black holes at finite temperature in the asymptotic, whose asymptotic geometry is the near horizon geometry at D0 brains in type 2A. In that case, you can actually show that the black hole lifetime goes exponentially in N, roughly speaking, at least in some regime.
Okay.
So I was wondering if the black hole lifetime goes like exponential in its mass, as opposed to some power of the mass, would it be possible to evade the standard information paradox?
I would have to think that through more carefully. Okay. We should discuss that.
Okay. Another question is, if I try to model the black hole, say, from the ADS-CFT perspective, there's various hints that it could be described by some quantum mechanical system where there's some effective, you have some quantum mechanics, many particles, and some effective potential barrier, and the black hole states would be some metastable states.
Yeah. Although that's hard for, we don't understand that for small black holes, for sure.
But suppose one proposes such a effective description, how would you test it? Would the pain-free condition be the most...
This is one of the troubles with ADS-CFT, is that to really sharply probe these questions, we would like to have a description of something like local observables, what local observers see, and try to compare different perspectives on black hole evolution. So what I'd really like to have in ADS-CFT is, some analog of that, which really, if it's a complete description of string theory, we need, because we need to be able to describe LHC experiments in a really big cosmos. That's a prerequisite, I think, to at least full tests of the black hole story, particularly for small black hole.
One last question.
Yeah, Don Page. Does the following picture make any sense to say, okay, the nice slice is nice, the curvatures are the extrinsic curvatures all are very small, but there's enormous boost factors if you parallel propagate something from one part to another. So if you parallel propagated some stress tensor from one part to another part, you'd get up to maybe super Planckian energy. So sense, it's nearly null, and I'm wondering if you're saying, well, the hypersurface is not so definitely spacetime, it's nearly null, and maybe quantum fluctuations in the causal structure make it as if it might be partly light-like, and then of course there's no problem with having information cloned on a light-like time-like surface. You can have the same information now and later. So I don't. I mean, I guess the question is: do we really need to worry about the information cloning problem if the hypersurface has such huge boost factors that it's hard to say for sure that it's really space-like?
Well, so I've given various arguments about what's wrong with the nice slices, and I think this is one sort of part of that story. which is the, there is a big invariant, a big relative boost between sort of the observer deep in the black hole on the nice slice in the far past and the observer out here. You can sort of integrate the extrinsic curvature or propagate and see that. And so that could well be part of the story. Of course, you need to explain ultimately how that fits into a story where the information is recovered. And there you need, apparently a little bit more of a leap.
Yeah.
Okay, let's